Maseches Damai, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Aleph, 3:1. A very important Mishnah. It says, Ma'achilin es ha'aniyim damai. One is allowed to feed aniyim, poor people, damai, meaning without taking the tithes. One just simply has to inform them that it's damai, and then if the ani wants to take upon himself to take the tithes, he is certainly allowed to, but we do not require that to happen. Ves ha'chsanya, also damai. One also may feed the achsanya with damai. According to the Bartanura, an achsanya is a soldier, Jewish soldiers that are passing through, where the burden to feed them falls upon the local population. So since these soldiers have nothing at the moment and have a din of being like poor people, we're lenient and we allow the local populace to feed these soldiers with demai produce. The other pshat, not the Bartanura's pshat, but others, most others, the Rambam, etc., learn that achsanya is talking about a guest, that a person who is being machnes oreach, who's bringing in a poor person to have a place to stay. So he treats that guest who has no other wherewithal to support himself as a poor person and can feed him with demai. Rabban Gamliel, haya ma'achel es polav demai. Rabban Gamliel held it was mutter to feed his workers who were working in his property, but they were aniyim, to pay them and feed them in demai. The custom in that time and place was when actually provided food for workers, and since they are legally aniyim, Rabban Gamliel felt it was mutter to feed them demai. However, the halacha doesn't follow him. The Chacham said, no, one can't settle his financial obligations with demai. And one has a basic financial obligation to provide what's normal to his workers, in this case, food. The mission now continues with a new point. We're talking now about people who are collecting food for distribution to the local poor. Now, we have a potential problem here in that some people who are going to be donating the food cannot be relied upon to take the proper hafrashas, and others who are receiving the food can't be relied upon to take the proper hafrashas. So, Beis Shammai has a simple solution. He says, let's keep track of the food, and that which comes from people who are strict will give to those who are lenient, and the food that came from those who are lenient will give to people who are strict. The Mishnah says inside, Gabay Tadaka, when people are collecting food for distribution, Beishamir Omrim, Nosin Es Hamu'usalish Enumaser, those who are collecting the food for further distribution to the local poor will keep the food they collect in two separate batches. Some food is collected from people who can be relied to take tithes, and others can't. So therefore the Mishnah says, Nosin es hamu'usalish inu ma'aser, that which was collected from those who do tithe reliably, will should be distributed to families who don't necessarily tithe properly. Ve'esh inu ma'usar lema'aser, and that which is collected from families who don't tithe properly could be distributed to families who are poor and can be relied upon nevertheless to tithe properly, and therefore it'll work out that Nimtu kol ha'adam ochlin musukan, it'll work out that everyone is eating tithe food ultimately. The Chacham said that's a terrible idea. Why? Because then people will see that their food is put into another category, their donation wasn't good enough for the rabbi, so to speak, and they'll end up giving less or nothing at all. And therefore, the Chacham Shita is instead, govin stam u'machalkin stam. You collect indifferently into a single batch, and you distribute indifferently from that collection batch, barota lesaken yisaken. And whoever wants to tithe as a recipient, the demai he is allowed to, of course, and he can, or more power to him. And according to some shitas, he actually has an obligation to do so. That's the Rambam Shita. But be that as it may, we as Govei Sadaka, collectors of Sadaka, distribute indiscriminately so as not to offend donors, thereby ultimately receiving less, which would be, of course, at the great expense of the aniyim. Maseches Damai, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Beis, 3:2. The Mishnah continues on to describe scenarios where a person who wants to be a ne'eman has to ensure that that which passes through his hands is properly tied before he walked away from it. So here we have a rota lachazom ale yarek lahakel memaso. If a person is traveling and he has a burden of, let's say, vegetables, let's say he's got a big, gigantic load of beets, and he wants to lighten his load, so he wants to cut off the beet leaves, which he doesn't intend to eat, and leave them on the side of the road. So he can't do that until lo yashlich ad sheyaser, until he first tithes it. So the case is, this person, for argument's sake, got these beets. He purchased them from someone who was an Am Haaretz, an Eino Ne'eman, and therefore the beets have a din of demai. And now he wants to rid himself of some excess weight by cutting off the beet leaves. So those beet leaves are edible, and there's a far out possibility that someone will find those beet leaves in the next few hours and make beet leaf soup out of them. And therefore, the person who wants to be a Ne'eman, has to first ensure that he tithes those beet leaves before leaving on the side of the road, lest someone be nichshal and cook and eat those demai beet leaves without taking further tithes. That's the case. Just the words of the Mishnah again. Harotza lachazom ale yarek lahaklum maso. If a person wants to, lachazom is an unfamiliar word. Bartanura says it has no similar word elsewhere in the Mishnah. If it means here to chop off those extra leaves. So lachazom ale yarek, to chop off the leaves of the vegetable, lahaklum maso, to lighten his load. Lo yashlich, he may not discard those leaves on the side of the road, ad shi'aser, until he takes the proper tithes. Now the truth is, that's the case of the Mishnah. The truth is, this applies equally to demai as it would apply to tevel gomor. Of course, if a person has regular tevel, he can't leave that on the side of the road on the chance that someone who would find it and therefore and eat it and eat untithed produce. It also similarly applies to any type of food that requires tithing. There's nothing magic about the leaves of the vegetables. We're taking that as an example, the most far example, because vegetable leaves are pretty worthless and pretty undesirable and have a very, very short shelf life sitting out there on the side of the road. They'll shrivel up and become useless pretty quickly. And therefore, even those leaves of vegetables, which are so unlikely to be consumed by a passerby, even those, since they're edible for human consumption and require tithing, either as tevel proper or as demai, the person has to tithe them first. Just an aside, since a person is being mafkir, he's abandoning ownership of these leaves, it would have to be that the obligations to tithe the vegetables had occurred prior to their abandonment. So the case would be something like, this is, you know, had Gmar Malacha, had a finishing of the processing of the vegetables, which is when the obligation to tithe that kicks in, and after that he decides to lachazom, to cut off some of the leaves. Okay, new case in the Mishnah. To understand this part of the Mishnah, you have to understand that when it comes to purchasing something in Jewish law, the acquisition occurs through an act of kinyan, through an act of acquisition, which is a formal requirement. And usually when it comes to chattels with movable objects, like food. So the way the kinyan occurs, the acquisition occurs, is through hagba'ah, through lifting up that object, that foodstuff. Which means when you go to the store and you, or the farmer's market, let's forget 21st century sensibilities, in the Mishnah's time, to keep it simple, the person goes to the farmer's market, he sees there an apple, he wants to buy the apple, he sees the apples cost, you know, $1 each, and he picks up the apple intending to acquire it, and there's a meeting of the minds. The seller wants to sell the apple for $1, the buyer wants to buy the apple for $1, and now what it does, he picks up the apple to make it his. At that point, the apple becomes the purchaser's apple. It transfers ownership, and he's responsible for it. If a minute later the apple gets struck by lightning, the loss is suffered by the purchaser and not by the seller, because the purchaser now owns this apple. The point is, that acquisition occurs, the transfer of ownership occurs, independently of the transfer of money. So the person could acquire the apple, because there's a meeting of the mind, plus the hagba, plus the lifting up of the apple, without transferring any money. And then after that, of course, the purchaser has to pay for what he has acquired. That's part of the deal. But as long as there's a meeting of the minds, meaning prior to the kinyan, the lifting up of the apple, the terms of the transaction are clear to both parties, and there's a will to make that transaction occur, then the lifting up of the apple is what affects the transaction, totally independent of the transfer of money. In fact, the transferring of money is totally irrelevant. If the person wants to purchase the apple, but instead of picking up the apple, he just pays the dollar and the salesman or the farmer takes that dollar, still the apple does not belong to the purchaser. And if lightning would strike the apple, then the loss would be suffered by the farmer, and he could demand his money back. So with that in mind, the missionary is talking about a person who's gone to the farmer's market, and he's checking out the apples, and he understands the apples cost $1 a piece, and he picks up a bunch of them, intending to acquire them. and therefore he does acquire them. But then he changes his mind and wants to put the apples back. Either he doesn't want so many apples after all, or he changes his mind about the apples, he wants red apples instead of green apples, or any other reason in the world. So when he returns the apples to their place, what he's doing effectively is selling them back or giving them back, exchanging them back with the farmer. And that means that the person who acquired the apple is now transferring out of his domain apples, which if they're demai, are demai, and therefore he has to ensure that they're tithed properly prior to returning the apples. So let's see the Mishnah's words inside, and then we'll just flesh out how it looks. The Mishnah says, Halokeach yarek min hashuk, if a person acquires a vegetable in the market, v'nimlach lahachzir, and he changes his mind. After picking up the vegetable and intending to acquire it, having previously had a meeting with the minds because the seller has set the price and it's clear it's a fixed price, whatever it is, and everyone understands what they're getting themselves into, and then he changes his mind and wants to exchange the vegetables for some fruits, and he puts the vegetables back, well, yachazir, he can't put those vegetables back, ad shia aser, until after he takes the proper tithes, she'enu mechusar ela minyan, because the transaction is done. All that was left to be done is simply the paying for the apple that was already acquired. Or and actually, this minyan means counting, which would mean the case would be he picked up apples knowing they're $1 a piece, but didn't actually count how many apples he picked up, and then turns out he wants to return some of those apples, all those apples after all. Now, an important additional point is who suffers the financial costs of this tithing? That is to say, if the case is hypothetically, this fellow picked up 100 apples and then he wants to return all 100 apples, so he can't do that until first tithing these apples, because these apples, let's say, are demai. So he has to take out the trumas meiser, that's 1%. So he has to take an apple out of the mix and call it trumas meiser and give it to the kohen. So who will suffer the cost of that? Who will pay for the apple? The answer is, it's the purchaser. The purchaser will have to give back only 99 apples. He'll have to take one apple that he separated and give that apple to a kohen as trumas meiser. And then he'll have to still pay the dollar to the farmer for the one apple, which he is not returning to the pile. Okay, fine. In addition, this case is limited in a number of ways. It's limited to a case where the apples are demai, meaning that if either the person selling it, the farmer, is a ne'eman, of course, then it's not demai. So the purchaser who picked up the apple, who's also ne'eman, can return it without further tithing because it's coming from a trustworthy ne'eman place. Or similarly, if the person selling the apples, in our case, or vegetables, whatever it is for whatever reason exempt from taking the demai tithes, let's say he's a wholesaler and he's selling in large quantities, like we said in the previous Mishnah, so that again, since that which is being sold here is exempt from tithing, and the burden of tithing it is falling on the purchaser, so then our purchaser here can return the apples, whatever it is, to the pile without a problem, and that's acceptable. Finally, the Yerushalmi points out there's actually a funny thing that happens here. See, the whole reason that we are requiring this purchaser to tie those apples of demai before putting them back into the farmer's pile is to prevent a michshel from happening, accidents of happening, whereby a future purchaser will take these apples, which are demai, maybe weren't tied properly, and he'll assume they were tied properly or won't care enough to tie them, and therefore he'll eat potentially untied produce, demai produce, so we're trying to prevent that. So what he's supposed to do is, of course, take the tithes out of doubt. Now, there's a separate rule, which is you can't take tithes from one batch on a separate batch if one of those batches is obligated in tithes and the second one already has had its tithes taken from it. And therefore, in our case here, if all the apples that are being sold are all demai, and then this purchaser returns 99 apples to the mix, and those are now vade mutukan, those are certainly tithed apples. So Yerushalmi speaks out that now you'll have to keep two separate, you know, sections of apples at the farmer's market, one for the demai and one for the properly tithed apples, so that no new michshel should come of tithing untithed onto tithed or vice versa. Okay, the Mishnah has its opposite case. Hayomed velokeach. The person simply shopping, he picks up, let's say, an apple or let's say an avocado. He picks up an avocado, he's picks it up. And he's sizing up if this avocado is sufficiently ripe for him or not, and he wants to decide that, so he's squeezing it. So he did pick it up, but he didn't have in mind to acquire the avocado. He's just sort of tentatively checking it out. V'ra to'an acher yaf memenu. Then he sees another batch with another batch of avocados that are preferable to the one he has in his hand. So then, mutlahachzir, he can put that avocado back in the pile, no problem. Mipnei shlo mashach, because he didn't pull it. But what it means conceptually is he didn't have intention to acquire it through an act of kinyan, and therefore he can put it back in the pile because he never acquired it in the first place. Picking it up without both that meaning of the mind and understanding of the price, etc., as well as the intention to acquire, doesn't affect transfer of ownership, and therefore there's no problem with the tentative picking up of a avocado to put it back into the pile. As a final side point, mashach is referring to means pull, like pulling towards himself. Normally, when it comes to kinyanim, acquiring movable objects, if one is able to lift them, they're small enough size, like an avocado or an apple, the way to acquire them is through hagba'a, through lifting them. A larger thing, let's say if you're acquiring a cow, obviously you're not going to lift that cow up, so then the way one acquires a cow is through mashicha, through pulling it, that someone shows ownership, etc. Here, the Mishnah uses mashach, pull, as if the proper way to acquire an apple or avocado or yarak, a vegetable, would be by pulling. That's not true. The only way to acquire a vegetable or fruit is by lifting it up. And therefore, presumably, the Mishnah here is talking about mashach, is speaking imprecisely. That's the simplest explanation of the Mishnah. And that's common in many Mishnahs, where the Mishnah refers to mashach, mashich, as a general term for doing an act of kinyan, even though literally it's not true. The way to acquire vegetables, etc., is through not mashicha, pulling, but by hagbah, lifting. Maseches Demai, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Gimel, 3-3. This Mishnah is quite similar to the previous. Here our case is Hamotzi Peros Baderech. If a person finds some sort of edible produce on the way, on the street, Venatlan La'achlan, he picks them up intending to eat them, and he wants to acquire this apple on the side of the road. So, Venimlach, after picking up that apple, he decides, after all, he's not going to eat the apple. He's going to put it on the side, lahatznia, to hide it away. Now, literally, hatznia means to hide it away, but here, conceptually, means to put it in a protected place so that it shouldn't be trampled by traffic and so on, as an act of respect to the food, which is required by halacha. So then, lo yatznia ad she'aser. He can't put it aside until he first tithes that apple. Again, assuming that the apple was chayv, it was required to be tithed. And we're talking about if it would be tevel, then it needs the tevel tithing, and if it's demai, the demai tithing as appropriate. But the point is, like the previous Mishnah, you can't leave food on the side of the road, even if it's not your food, once you picked it up intending to eat it and acquire it, because now you'd be letting out of your hand food that is not necessarily tithed properly, and therefore is a public stumbling block, and therefore you have to protect the public by first tithing that food before putting it down. However, v'mitchila natlan b'shvil shlo yavdu, if the only reason in the first place you picked up that apple on the side of the road is so it shouldn't be trampled by oncoming traffic, and you didn't intend to ever eat it, you just wanted to pick it up to put it in a safe place, then putter, and of course you're off the hook from tithing it. So the chiddush is you are picking up this apple and you're putting it down again elsewhere. So you might have thought since it passed through your hand, you'd have to tithe it as demai or whatever would be appropriate for this food. And the situation, the answer is no. If you'd never acquired it, it's not your problem. It's only your problem and your requirement to tithe it if you did first acquire it and intend to have it as your food. Mishnah continues, Kol davar she'ein adam rashai l'machro demai. Any scenario where a person is not allowed to sell this particular foodstuff in a state of demai, let's say, for example, it's a small quantity of food, and we said before that when you sell small quantities in retail, you always have to tithe it first. So similarly here, this guy has demai, but he doesn't want to, and he wouldn't be allowed to sell it as demai if he were a salesperson. Lo yishlach l'chavero demai. Then even if he's not a salesperson and he wants to send it as a gift to his friend, he may not send it as a gift until he first tithes it properly. The reason why is because we're afraid that the friend will make a mistake, not take it seriously, even though there's a big, on the card, the gift card, it says, here, I have this wonderful gift of demai wine, don't forget to tithe it yourself. That's not sufficient because we're afraid the person might make a mistake or forget and end up drinking that wine without having tithed it properly. Rabbi Yossi Matir Bevadai. Rabbi Yossi says, listen, if you're sending not demai, but vadai, certain tevel, this is 100% tevel wine that you yourself know has never been tithed. Rabbi Yossi says, in such a case, you could send it as a gift. Ilblavaj yodienu, as long as you inform the recipient that it's tevel. Rabbi Yossi holds that person can be relied upon where he can be relied upon to take the tithes for himself. And therefore, if you want to give a gift of tevel, it's not a problem. Just make sure that the recipient knows, and the recipient, presuming that he's reliable, can be relied upon to take the tithes. Rabbi Yossi agrees that if it's only, quote unquote, only demai, then you may not send it as a gift, because demai being sort of less severe than tevel, because tevel certainly needs to be tithed, truma gadol, etc. Whereas demai, maybe yes, maybe no, midrash to mutter, etc. So therefore, Rabbi Yossi holds that people might be more lax with demai, ironically, and therefore he doesn't allow demai to go out as a gift ever, even with information and notice that it's demai. But he does allow for tevel proper. However, the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yossi. Halacha is a person who's a ne'eman, reliable for tithing, can never send gifts of any kind, whether tevel or demai, without first tithing it so it's properly mesukan and edible as is. Maseches Demai, Per Gimel, Mishnah Dalet, 3-4. The next three Mishnayos discuss the question of when one gives his produce to the safekeeping of another person, whether when he gets it back from that person, he can assume it's what he gave them, and therefore not have a problem with Demai all over again if that person were not ne'eman, reliable regarding tithing. We start out with Hamol Chitim Letochen Kusi, or Letochen Ama Arts. If a person brings his wheat to a miller to grind that wheat to make flour, so he'd leave off that wheat kernels with the miller and come back, let's say, the next day to get back his flour. So can you trust that the Am Haaretz who gives back the flour is giving the flour from the very wheat that the person deposited with that miller? So the Gemara answers, Bechezkasan l'maestras v'lishvias. Yes, he can. He, the person who dropped off the wheat, can assume that when he gets back is flour that came from the very wheat that he gave, and therefore he need not tithe it a second time. The reason why he can believe it is because if the miller would switch his wheat with another person's wheat, that would be stealing. And there's no reason to assume that an Ama Aretz is dishonest and would steal your wheat. Therefore, he can be believed. I gloss over a few pieces in the Mishnah here, let me just go back to them. The first is the Kusi. So Kusi is being lumped together with Am Haaretz. A Kusi is in English the Samaritan. The Kusim were people who were brought in after the Assyrian exile in the time of Bais Rishon. There are people to repopulate the land in the north of Israel, in Samaria. They were brought in and they were not Jewish, but they ended up converting to be Jews in the wake of ongoing attacks by lions. And therefore, those Kusim thought it must be that the local god was disappointed with them, and they could win that local god's favor by converting to the local god's religion and save themselves from the lions. So they converted to become Jewish. And therefore, throughout the Mishnaic period, these Kusim are considered to be Jews, but with a big question mark lurking over their heads. The reason why is because the Kusim seem to be rather lax regarding their observance of Torah Shabbat Peh mitzvahs. They just kept the Torah Shabbat Chasav, the written Torah mitzvahs. And therefore, the rabbis are always not quite certain how to treat them in terms of their conversion. Later, in the middle of the Talmudic period after this Mishnah was written, it was discovered that on Har Grizim, which is where they did their special prayers, they had a idol in the shape of a dove. And as soon as the rabbis realized that, so they treated the Kusim to be generic idolaters of the Avodah Zarah and not in the category of Jewish Am Haaretz. But in any case, in our Mishnah, we were treating the Kusi as being an Am Haaretz. Now, the second thing I glossed over in the Mishnah is that the punchline said you can rely that what you get back from the miller is wheat that you deposited by him just now in the shape of flour, with respect to two areas of halacha, both maestras as well as shvias. Shvias is the shmita produce, the seventh year of the seven-year cycle, and that comes with many restrictions. So let's say it's shmita time, but you deposited was wheat that wasn't yet having Kedusha Shvias, you have to be afraid that maybe what you're getting back is flour with Kedusha Shvias. The answer is, if the miller is an Am Haaretz or a Kusi, you do not need to be afraid that what he gave you was not what you deposited with him and he performed the old switcheroo. On the other hand, says the Mishnah, the Tochen Nachri, if the miller is a non-Jew, another Girsos have it as being Ovid of Arazara, he's an idolater, so then what you get back from that miller is Demai. That is to say, we are afraid that non-Jews or Ovdei Avodah Zarah, idolaters, are suspect of performing the old switcheroo and giving you wheat from someone else's flour. Although that, of course, is really theft, they didn't necessarily have a compunction against doing that. And therefore, if the miller is not Jewish, you have to be afraid that he switched your wheat with someone else's wheat and that other person was in Am Aretz. And therefore, even though the wheat kernels that you gave for grinding were totally Masukan, they were not at all Tevla or Demai, they were totally ready to eat. When you get it back from the miller who's not Jewish, you have to be afraid that it has come from someone else's wheat and he just didn't care about giving you flour from someone else's batch and the other person was an Am Aretz and the other person's Am Aretz wheat is therefore got a din of Demai. The next case, the Mishnah. Hamafkid peirosav eitzel hakusi o eitzel Am Haaretz. If a person just deposited, let's say by his next door neighbor, you know, for safekeeping, his food, his produce, with his next door neighbor who was either an Am Haaretz or a kusi, then bechaz kasan lamaisis v'lishviyas, similar to the previous clause of the Mishnah, you can assume that what you get back from your Am Haaretz or kusi watchman is the very stuff you gave. You don't have to be afraid that there was some switcheroo, because again, switcheroo would be theft. Why would you think this is different in the first case? So the answer is, for starters, there's a good reason why the miller would want to be more scrupulous regarding how he treated your stuff, and that is because he has a business to run, he has a reputation which could get ruined if you find out that he is, you know, not being honest or giving you stuff that isn't yours. And therefore, you might have thought that the miller has a better reason to be scrupulous than a regular Am Haaretz or kusi, and therefore they're less reliable as just generic watchmen. But the answer is no, they're equally reliable. On the other hand, the Mishnah says, Eitzel HaNachri, if the person who deposited your stuff for safekeeping was a generic either non-Jew or idolater, different yourselves again, Kepero Sav, you treat what you get back from that watchman, that non-Jewish watchman, as if it were his own produce. What that means is, let's select the Rambam for starters, keep it simple. The Rambam holds that the halacha produce that's grown in Eretz Yisrael by non-Jews is exempt from tithing. That would be qualified if the person who did the growing was not Jewish, but the person who did the Gemar Malacha, the finishing of the processing, was Jewish. In such an event, the produce is once again required to be tithed. So Kepirosav means, however the halachas shake out, you have to assume that what you get back from the non-Jew who is safeguarding your stuff is not the stuff you gave to him, that it's his own stuff, and we have the leniencies as appropriate in that case. Now, Rabbi Shimon Omer Damai. Rabbi Shimon says, no, you can't assume that the switcheroo happened between your stuff and the non-Jewish guardian stuff. He says you have to be afraid that your stuff comes from a Jewish Am Haaretz, and therefore it has a din of Demai. Now, the Tanakhama never thought that, because the Tanakhama reasons that this person is not a professional wheat guardian. He's just someone, your next-door neighbor or whatever it is. And where in the world would he come up with other sacks of wheat to exchange from other Am Haaretz? Like, why would he have such a thing? And therefore, you assume if it came from anyone else, it came from him directly. But Shimon says, no, listen, if it's good enough to be a guardian for your wheat, very possibly your next or other next-door neighbor who was Am Haaretz also asked him to watch his wheat, and the first switcheroo did happen. However, the halacha is like the Tanakhama, meaning we're not afraid that there's another third party mixed in here with the wheat. It's just assumed that it's very possible that the wheat that was deposited by the non-Jewish watchman is the non-Jewish watchman stuff, possibly, and would carry potential churma as the halachas would warrant. Maseches Demai, Per Gimel Mishnehei, 3-5. Following on from the previous Mishnah, we're talking about cases where you deposit your food with another person, and the question of whether you need to be concerned that when you get it back from that person performed the old switcheroo, giving you something that belonged to them or someone else, not your own stuff. This Mishnah discusses the case of the pundakis. The pundakis, or the pundakit, is the innkeeper lady. She owns some kind of like a hostel or like a motel. And the way it was back then, oftentimes you wouldn't just get bed, but also food or food services. They had the kitchen, etc. So a person would stay at this inn and they would give the raw materials to the innkeeper to prepare food for them. So the question is, if you gave your flour to this innkeeper to make you, you know, I don't know what, toast and eggs for breakfast, do you have to be afraid that the toast you get back, so to speak, is from the flour that you gave, in which case everything's fine, or that perhaps you performed the old switcheroo, giving you other flour, made other toast, and therefore, once again, since she is an Am Haaretz, so it's Dama'a all over again. The Mishnah says, Hanosin lefundakis, if a person gives his produce to the innkeeper for preparing him food, Maaser eshu nosin la, ve'eshu notal mimena, you have to tithe your stuff twice, both before you give it to her, you have to tithe it, and again, when you get it back from her, you tithe it a second time. Why? Bipnei shechashuru lachalof, because we are afraid that she will perform the switcheroo and give you not what you gave her. Now, why would she do that? Because she actually, according to Tanna Kamma, she has your best interest in mind. She wants to have a good breakfast, not a lousy breakfast or a cold breakfast or the accidentally burnt breakfast. And therefore, since she wants to be a happy customer, she wants you to stick around a long time and patronize her in again and again, etc. She has a vested interest of making sure that your food is good. And therefore, she is likely to switch what you gave her to some better quality produce, or if something went wrong with your food or went got cold, she would eat your stuff and then give you some of her stuff, etc. So since we're afraid that she's going to eat your stuff, you have to make sure you tithe it before you give it to her. And since we're afraid that you're going to eat her stuff, you have to tithe it back from her, since it's demai when she gives it back to you. Amar Biyosi, Rilo says, are you kidding? Ein anu achrayin l'ramayin. Why in the world should we be responsible for tricksters, tricky people? No one told her to take your food and eat it. And if she's going to take your food and eat it, so then that's her problem with the consequences of that bad behavior fall on her shoulders. Therefore, einu ma'aser ela mashu no tel mimena blavad. According to Biyosi, you don't need to tithe it before you give it to her. Just tithe it when you get it back from her. Then you're A-OK because you've tithed what you've gotten back. And if what she gave you was her stuff and she is an Am Haaretz and it's demai, so you tithed it. And if she ate your stuff and you didn't tithe it yet, okay, that's her problem. No one told her to eat your food. She's a tricky, tricky lady and she'll suffer the consequences from being dishonest. The Tanna Kamma sees things differently. Tanna Kamma agrees that ein anu achrayin l'ramayin. It's true that we don't have to shoulder the burden of protecting other people who are being dishonest and acting, you know, as bad actors. Their willful misconduct is not our problem. However, in the case of the pundakis, the Tanna Kamma holds she's not acting as a bad actor. She's not doing willful misconduct. She thinks she's doing you a favor. She holds her food's kosher. She's just an Am Haaretz. She just can't be reliant upon for that. And she thinks she's doing you a big favor by giving you the better quality food and eating your food instead. And therefore, in such a case, we are responsible to make sure that she doesn't get the short end of the stick and eats food that is untithed. And therefore, we must tithe before we give it to her, as well as when we get it back from her. And that is the halacha. Maseches Damai, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Vav 3:6, the last in the series. Here we have Hanosan Lachamaso. A person gives the raw materials for making food to his mother-in-law. Maaser Eshu Nosan La, Ve'eshu Notmimena. Like the Pundakis in the previous case, one has to both tithe what he gives his mother-in-law and what he gets back from her. Mipnei Shehi Chashura Lachalof Et Hamiskalkel. Because she is suspected of switching out the food in the event that the food went wrong. You know, if she burnt the soup, she'll switch out the vegetables, that she'll eat them or she'll get rid of them and give you new vegetables of a non-burnt vegetable soup. The reason why the Tanna Kamma holds this is because the mother-in-law wants the best for her daughter, so she won't serve her bad food. And she's ashamed in front of her son-in-law of her bad cooking. So therefore, she's liable to eat the burnt soup or whatever the, you know, ruined food is, herself, and then give you new ones from her stuff. But since she is an Am Haaretz, you have to be afraid that she'll eat your stuff, therefore you have to tithe it first, and you'll eat her stuff, therefore you have to tithe it a second time when you get it back from her. Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says, now the pshat here according to Yerushalmi is, this is Rabbi Yehuda talking, and he is the Tanna Kamma, so he's not arguing. Rabbi Yehuda says further, Ro tzehi b'takanas bita uvosha mechasana. Rabbi Yehuda says, the reason why is, as I explained, he, the mother-in-law, wants the best for her daughter, as well as, and she's ashamed of her son-in-law if she burns the food, etc. But Moder Bihuda, Rabbi Yehuda does agree, but Nosin Lachamaso Shvius, that if what he gave his mother-in-law was Shvius, was produce in the Shemitah year, but itself wasn't Shvius produce, since the mother-in-law knows that Shvius produce proper has all sorts of restrictions, and she would be careful about that and not switch the non Kedusha Shvius Peros for Kedusha Shvius Peros. She wouldn't do that to her daughter, and therefore the Mishnah says, Mother Rabbi Yehuda benosin chamaso Shvius, Rabbi Yehuda agrees that when he gives the produce to his mother-in-law, and it's Shvius year, but not Shvius produce, she'eina chashuda lachalif, ha'ochel as bita Shvius. He wouldn't switch around that food giving the daughter, her daughter, Kedusha Shviyas food. Now, it's a fascinating thing. We only have one sheet explicitly in the Mishnah, and therefore the Mishnah Berurah says, like the Rambam and the Parash Mishnayos, the halacha follows Rabbi Yehuda, and that's all we have to go on. Why not? However, the Chachamim hold in Yerushalmi, not like Rabbi Yehuda. They hold that the mother-in-law is not embarrassed of her son-in-law and her bad cooking, and therefore she would not switch out the food if she happened to spoil it. And the Rambam in the Yad, in Hilchos Maaser, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Yud Beis, 11-12, paskens like the Chachamim in the Yerushalmi that the mother-in-law is not suspected of switching out the food.